Hi, it's Jeremy. A quick note before we begin. First, I'd like to apologize for episodes being so sporadic lately. We've been recording a lot of them, but we've just been running into a lot of technical issues, and since I strive to have an episode out every week, and that really hasn't happened this year, I'd just like to apologize. Now on to more bad news. We had a technical snafu while recording this episode, and about 50 minutes in, all of the audio got corrupted. We lost this and an entire another episode. I did everything I could, but the best I could get the audio to sound like was like this. Warning, if you're using headphones, skip ahead like 10 seconds.
But Water Godzilla attacks, and Arun's like, here, Mr. Football Star, have a sword. And you're like, what's going on?
Obviously, we couldn't put out an episode like that, so we got Kevin back. We recorded a bunch of episodes for Thanksgiving and re-recorded the ending of this episode. Unfortunately, that somehow got lost as well. And there's no way we can get together and record it before Thanksgiving again. I don't want to hold the episode any longer. We have a bunch of ones after it, like I said, with Kevin joining us, that are ready to go. So this one just needs to get out. So this episode is going to end abruptly. I might show up at the end to say goodbye and all that. Apologies for the low quality and lack of episodes lately. Please enjoy. It's Thursday, November 17th, 2016, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, a show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 167, Never Ending Psychic Nightmare. Runtime for this episode is 58 minutes. Welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that's maybe the one that's a little bit psycho. My name is Jeremy.
I have at least 30% more on the PK scale than any other child psychic.
PK
I'm
fire.
Tyler.
Okay.
PK love!
There's a reason no one said that one. Is PK love even a thing, or is that just one of the default names for...
Yeah, it's just one of the default names.
What is the... PK rockin'? What is the default? Anyway.
I would have rather played a better psychic game than the one we got now. My name is Zach.
Yeah, why didn't we play Earthbound? What the hell? What the hell, us?
Why didn't we play PsyOps?
Yeah, fourth person who hasn't said anything yet.
Rejoining us is Kevin again. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I guess now you'll be entering my mind.
Ooh. Is that where this is a good video game? Because I feel like that would actually be super interesting. Like if I could see like Twilight from the perspective of a teenage girl who liked it.
Stay out of my head.
That seems like a weird place to input yourself.
I think it's just Twilight is really to me the series that I didn't like but tried to dissect, and like because it was making millions and millions of dollars, clearly something was appealing about it and I just so didn't get it.
I took
a very clinical. No, it's not even that. There is a fantasy at play there that is underserved. I have similar feelings about Ruby, actually. Although with Ruby, I understand we don't have enough female action protagonists, so I get why the only ones we have seem amazing.
Why do I like it, though? Because clearly I'm not the target demographic.
You're an idiot.
Okay.
Why do you like Ruby, or why do you like Twilight?
No. Why do I like Ruby? I understand what the appeal of Twilight is. I'm also not the target audience for that.
That's a good question. I don't know. Why do you like Ruby?
I was going to say it's really hard because one of the reasons I don't like Ruby is the same reason I didn't like the most recent Mad Max movie, which is I'm not a visual person at all. Visual storytelling doesn't impress me at all. And that's one of my major sticking points with Ruby is so much is put into visuals.
That's fair.
I assume you feel that way too, though, given
the way
we feel similarly about things. So
I didn't really
like the
new Mad Max for a similar reason.
Do you think the humor is good in Ruby? Okay, that's my feelings on the humor in Ruby.
I do actually really like the visuals of Ruby, though. And it's also got a killer soundtrack.
Yeah, the soundtrack is great, but I have iTunes, so I just listen to the soundtrack.
Ruby, for me, is, like, for whatever reason, that is like the one series in which I see the strings, and it bugs me.
Oh, yeah, I see so many strings. That's another problem. But like, just I don't want to turn this into RubyCast, but season 4 episode 1 just came out for the plebs like me. And I actually think it would work really well if it was the first episode of the series, but like as a continuation of the narrative, it has a lot of strings dangling.
Yeah.
It introduces a lot of characters and are like, "Hey, these guys are important now." It's like, "Cool." So yeah, if you like Ruby, that's cool. I don't. Every season, I hope it gets better.
We've got a 50-50 split on that.
So, actually, one more thing. What did you think of Pyrrha's death in Ruby?
Because
I did not give a and I think they wanted me to.
I gave some.
A lot of people in comments were saying this, like, chapter 4 feels like the beginning of the series, and I kind of agree. Why did you show me the prologue? It would have been much more interesting if I wondered why John was sad all the time and where his cool gold on his sword came from instead of knowing and just feeling sort of...
Yeah, I mean, I felt her death could have been handled a little bit better.
It didn't have nearly as much weight.
I also feel like she's maybe the weakest character on the show.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is she's already a well-developed human, which doesn't make for a great fictional character.
They have show-don't-tell problems in Ruby, too, and I said this wasn't going to become RubyCast, so it's not. So we played another thing this week that I don't like, which is Psychonauts, and if you like Psychonauts, I also get why. But
I don't.
This actually a good comparison. I don't like either of these things, but kind of wish I did, except I didn't manage to hate play through Psychonauts the way I can hate watch play Ruby sometimes.
Is that a thing people do?
I hate play? It must be, right? Like, I definitely hate watch things. Not as much anymore.
How do you think I get through pretty much any game on this series?
You do because we force you to.
I feel like you play for like 5 minutes.
You also don't get through any game that we play for this series.
Hey, I have gotten through a couple of games.
Okay. Like Fire Emblem?
KOTOR?
I didn't actually get through KOTOR this last time.
But you probably liked the ones that you got through.
Yes.
All right. So, Kevin, what have you been playing?
So, Dishonored 2 is coming out fairly soon. So
this month, isn't it?
Yeah, sometime this month. So I decided to pre-order it, and as part of pre-ordering it, I got all of Dishonored 1 and all of its DLC, which I had played Dishonored 1 before, but I have never played the DLC, so I'm going back and doing a playthrough of that just to reacquaint myself with the story, as well as I enjoyed it.
Are you pulling off any crazy Dishonored shenanigans?
Not yet, although I did try doing the trick where you use what they call elevators in the speedrunning community, which is where you, like, jump at a certain section of wall and you will just fly to the top of the skybox and then can run around. So you can actually use it to skip, like, the first part of the game where you're stuck in a prison, because you can jump to the top of the prison and instead of having to fight your way through, you just leave.
Well, it tends to be a pretty helpful way to get out of there.
Yeah, I'm playing through that. I've been playing a bit of Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Did you kill Double Batman? He's one of the villains, right?
I guess.
Well, I mean, single Batman, also gender swapped, is one of the heroes.
Yes, the Wraith,
so.
I'm aware. Oh, she has medical stuff.
So I brought that with us to Ed's game night recently, and like a couple cards fell out of the box and I picked them up. Did you know that Ra is a hero in that? Because I always forget he's in there.
Yeah, he has some powers.
He's actually pretty interesting because one of the cards he has turns all hero damage to fire damage and then increases all fire damage by 1.
And then everyone attacks absolute 0. And then
yes, I want the golden dream of doing 29 damage to absolute 0 in a turn and then having him deal like 60 damage to the enemy villain. But I've beaten most of the villains, I think, at this point. I've even beaten the core 4 on advanced mode.
They're harder on advanced mode.
The core
Baron Switchblade is still pretty easy. The ones that come in the box.
Okay.
Switchblade,
Citizen Dawn,
Omnitron, and Darkseid.
Yeah, Darkseid.
Grand Warlord Voss, because we don't want to get sued for copyright.
I mean, it worked for Marvel.
I also very recently got two of the achievements of beating a game without using any powers and beating a game without playing any cards.
Wow. No powers?
Yeah, so you can't use
any... No cards seems harder to me.
No cards was harder.
Yeah, because without using any powers, you play a bunch of characters that... just get a lot of damage from playing stuff out of their deck.
Like, Tachyon doesn't need to use her power to be effective, so I used her. I also had...
Chrono Ranger doesn't need to use his power, he just gets to bonus things.
Yep. I had Legacy because I could get Inspiring Presence, so that's a card that grants everyone +1 damage.
Huh.
But yeah, the no cards was definitely harder. I had a 5-man team fighting off against one of the new villains out of the brand new expansion pack. And it was just a team of people that their power was deal a target X damage. So it was like, I'm going to have Haka punch you in the face, and then I'm going to have Tempest shoot everyone for a point of damage, and then I'm going to have Mr. Fixer punch you in the face.
Yeah, I have Girl Legacy laser beam you in the face.
I had regular Legacy to increase everyone else's damage. Because I had a five-man team, basically it meant four extra damage every time Legacy used his power instead of the three extra damage for Girl Legacy.
So is Girl Legacy just Legacy's daughter? Because she's definitely on that one card.
I'm not sure.
I've always assumed daughter.
Supposed to be because of how Legacy's backstory is. I haven't really read much of the lore. I should do that.
Oh, Legacy, like really their cool. family gets a new power every generation,
which is why it's her Legacy.
And her power is heat vision.
Yeah, it's on the card Next Evolution. She's accidentally burning a fork, and he's like looking surprised at it.
I think his was invulnerability, which seems like one you might have wanted.
I don't. Think
or is it flight? It was one of the two basic ones.
I don't know if it's flight. I don't remember exactly what it is. I don't think it's invulnerability though, because he in the lore he dies and she takes over as leader of the.
It's
Justice
limited
League.
Invulnerability. Like, I was wondering what happens if they have, like, siblings in that. Like, do they both get a different
power? They both get half the power.
Well, they're all
named Paul. They're
only
one.
No, they have to pull a Wonder Twins. Yes.
Anything else, Kevin?
That's really
You've been playing Star Realms.
Yes.
The much more broken card game.
Sentinels doesn't strike me as a bastion of balance. It's just not competitive, so you don't really care.
That's fair.
But yeah, Tyler got me into playing Star Realms, which I sort of enjoy, but some of the randomness of it sometimes makes me want to set it down, but then I'll come back and play it, because again, it's random, so it's not always impossible.
Now I just want 3 out of 4 stars. I sort of enjoy it.
The mobile app is really good. I have to give it that.
Yeah, the mobile app is good. The Steam app actually works pretty well.
Also pretty good.
A lot of the times I use that one, because, you know, my screen is bigger.
That's fair. Well, a lot of times I'm not at my computer.
Yeah,
so.
No, I understand that, and I do the same thing, and I play both. I like the fact that I can use my Steam app to play against your mobile app. That's pretty
cool. That is kind of cool.
Yeah,
they have that implemented.
That just sounded like Yu-Gi-Oh! Proper nouns to me. Ah, yes, but I use my Steam app, destroying your mobile app, and allowing me to summon two from the graveyard.
Aha, you've activated my iOS.
Speaking of that, have you guys heard of the GamerOom thing that Facebook is developing?
What?
It's called Game Room, and it's going to be Facebook's version of Steam.
Oh, okay. Game Room. Yeah, I heard Gamer Oom.
Yeah, me too. The joke is Gamer Oom, because they put it all as one word. Game Room is what it's supposed to be
called.
It's
about gamers who are out of mana.
Yeah.
It's a documentary.
Well, if Facebook wants to make a Steam-related thing, they can get in line behind Origin, Uplay,
No, you don't get
Dog.
It, man. They have such a huge user base. We're going to get all these people who play Farmville playing, like...
Farmville 2.
Yeah.
You joke, but not only do they have that, they have the Oculus Rift.
Yeah, no, I'm like,
I
legit serious.
Xbox One.
Facebook owns Oculus.
Yeah, so the...
Facebook.
The news article I was watching talked about Facebook just seems to be trying to increase their, like, player... Or, not player base.
Penetration.
But, yeah, they're trying to increase the amount of people that use Facebook. Which this does not seem like a good app for, because you have to download a separate app in order to run Game Room, so you're not going to get that casual player.
This does sound like a great way to increase the number of people who are going to use anything else Facebook owns in the gaming arena, though. Because there's going to be a bunch of people who only use Facebook who are like, ooh, games on Facebook? It's a separate app, sure.
Okay.
What's this Rift thing?
Everybody,
also,
quick question. How many of us here could actually run any kind of virtual reality thing on our rigs?
Yeah, I could. Not as well as you could, but...
Also consider the average Facebook user is, what, 30, 40? So they have kids, and if their kids want to play games, consider the mother who just uses Game Room because she uses Facebook, and her kid doesn't know what a Steam is.
A Steam.
All right, fair enough.
The counter-argument that the news group made was, why not just play the mobile app of something? You know, give the kids a phone and have them play Bejeweled.
I'm just being devil's advocate because that's my role. I don't think this is a great idea. I also don't think it's an idea that costs Facebook much, though. So
yeah, that's my argument.
You got to play the lottery to win.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to compete with people who are already too well established to dislodge or do any real damage to.
And my counter argument to that is I don't think you understand how irrationally devoted to Facebook some people are.
Yeah, the people who are irrationally devoted to Facebook aren't generally going to be doing a heavy-handed gaming like you would find in something like that.
But they might if Facebook makes a gaming thing.
If what you're saying is true and the gamers are too entrenched, doesn't it make more sense to go after a market that isn't?
That is also true.
creating a market is the easiest way to make millions.
I feel this is just a silly move, not necessarily a bad move.
What are they going to put on it?
Yeah, that's my bigger question.
You know those ads that you'll sometimes see on Facebook, if any of you ever look, they're like crappy versions of real games. It's like, would you like to play?
Tyler doesn't have one, Jeremy doesn't have one, and I barely ever use mine.
Yeah, so this service isn't for us, so why are we critiquing it?
Because that's what we do on this
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, because it's adjacent to what we're talking about.
Again, they're like crappy versions of actual games. So there's like...
League of Angels is one that I keep seeing on the League of Legends.
Oh my god.
They hijack League of Legends artwork. That's why I keep seeing it on the League of Legends thing.
Theft of Auto, I've seen.
All right, anything else, Kevin?
No, that's really all I've been playing.
All right, what about you, Tyler? You also have hair that is not the standard color.
That is true, although mine is by choice.
Yours is... pink.
It does look pink for the way the light's hitting it when I look at it, too. But that's not what's important here. What's important is video games. Tyler, which ones do you want to talk about in your segment?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know that I've actually really been playing games, which is a little disappointing. I've been playing Get Beat to a Bloody Pulp by Wark the past couple weeks, which is...
That's a rough game. I heard
with a lot of grinding.
Yeah. A lot of grinding. I hear the achievements are kind of a bitch, too.
Yeah, but your gamer score goes up so much.
Yes.
No, your gamer score doesn't go up. The problem is... like the only score that goes up is the score that's in your bank account.
Yeah,
which
you
use to buy
score.
Games.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, but it's a tangential relationship.
Microtransactions don't buy themselves.
I'm just saying, I could buy 10,000 copies of like something that costs like $60.
Buy me Fallout 4.
I found a copy of the BioWare Sonic DS RPG for $8 today and was like, thank you, GameStop. I will be taking that off your hands.
Is that a thing?
That's a
I've
thing.
I've never heard. What's
they
it called?
You
Dark Brotherhood.
Wait, Sonic?
Dark Brotherhood, a BioWare RPG.
They did not pay you to take this.
No.
You had to pay them for the privilege.
I did. I also bought a Bulbasaur for my car.
I saw that.
Yeah,
that's
a good choice.
I really do like your bitchin' Bulbasaur, man.
I haven't seen
it yet. I
meant
to say that.
So yes, good choice there. I'm sorry. Dark Brotherhood.
Yep.
Does not seem
it
to be.
It sounds like a BioWare
that...
game, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes, it does.
It doesn't sound like a Sonic game.
Dark Brotherhood was the name that they meant to give to Dragon Age 2. It was supposed to be Dragon Age 2 Dark Brotherhood, but then they misplaced the name and it got onto Sonic, the Sonic game, and Dragon Age 2 released as Dragon Age 2.
No, isn't that the Assassin's Guild in the
Elder Scrolls?
The Elder Scrolls yeah. games?
Yes, but that's Bethesda.
All right, so what darks have you been brotherhooding, Zach?
Well, I've been doing some Dark Brotherhood stuff with my Payday crew.
Oh, yeah.
You assassin some people?
We played some Payday. We completed some mayhem missions.
We did indeed.
I think we completed one.
Did you make jokes about Allstate Insurance while you did?
No, we didn't. We should have. We played a level of Shadow Raid, which we haven't done in a while.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin helped.
Yes, I was
hiding
so
in the sewers the entire time.
He was ferrying bags. It was actually like
It was actually really helpful. I'm being sarcastic, but it actually was very helpful.
The desync on stealth missions gets really bad in that game sometimes, and I have a crappy internet connection and was extremely far away from the host.
So sometimes it takes like 5 seconds for the game to alert you that you've been noticed,
and by that time I've been fully noticed rather than you know, there's nothing I can do about it.
That's one of the main reasons why we as a group don't tend to do a great deal of stealth missions, is because the desync is really bad.
It is.
Yeah, group stealth missions, the only ones we tend to do are ones where you can have somebody in plain clothes walk in and just be a spotter for the guy who's actually stealthing.
And even then, we're usually on the side of...
getting ready to go plan B anyway.
Yeah, someone's the plain clothes guy, but that's usually just wait until Tyler screws something up and
so
we all go louder.
It's usually, I'm the plain clothes guy, Zach is in full body armor and riot gear waiting outside, while Tyler is trying to stealth the mission. And then when he screws up, we all load up and start fighting cops.
I'm on my way to Comic-Con.
Sounds like
full
the Matrix.
Body armor, wearing with a mask, my Winchester, and a Peacemaker pistol. You're going to Comic-Con as what?
The Matrix.
The Matrix. Isn't Comic-Con in San Diego? Yes. We're in Washington. I know.
I meant PAX.
No, I have to catch a flight.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you be heading to the airport?
What achievement were we actually trying to do? Because I know we're trying to do the safe house one and screwed it up.
I will walk through walls.
To get
6 bags without killing anybody.
Oh, yeah. We got that one eventually.
No,
right?
We didn't.
No, did we get anything
eventually? We got retrieve the samurai armor.
Except that didn't actually count because we didn't finish the
mission. No, we got samurai armor for Kevin because he didn't have that achievement yet.
No, I think I had that.
No,
achievement.
It was the
one I think
plus
we got,
16.
Yeah, we got the pass through walls. It was when we were trying to get all the samurai armor first.
Oh, that's
that
we
didn't
up?
Actually finish the mission, so then therefore we lost.
Okay, I couldn't remember, and we get the achievements for doing that one on Mayhem. But the big one that I've been playing is Doom, which Doom. Actually showed up on the website a couple of weeks ago.
Doom.
Where I put a video on the site.
Domo.
So I beat that game, which it's fantastic. Like, as much fun as the first Doom was, this is like taking the original Doom that we talked about and gave a lot of praise to and just adding 3D to it.
Yeah, it actually looks really good.
I have a lot to say about Doom. I'm not sure if I want to say it here or not. What I'm really curious is, how do you think it compares to Doom 3? Because I know you actually rather like Doom 3.
I do rather like Doom 3. Doom 2016 is better. Doom 3 is a game that's not sure what its franchise is. If it didn't have Doom on the title, it'd be fine. Because it's like the survival horror type game. Doom as a franchise is not that.
Well, Doom 3's thing is it has the Duke Nukem problem of games kept getting more and more advanced, and it wouldn't, because Doom was so cutting edge, what was important to them was that Doom 3 be cutting edge, and they lost what was good about Doom in doing that.
But, I mean, it's still a good game. I wouldn't say it's bad. You can
but what I've heard
Steam.
Is that Doom 4 is just better.
Doom 4
around.
Is fantastic. There's so much stuff that you can just do and get away with. Like, I was at one point being chased down by a bunch of melee guys, the Pinkies, and I jumped up.
The Pinkies.
The, you know, the they're,
Narf!
They're pink from Doom 1. They're just the pink guys. That
yeah, I know which one you're talking about now that
no,
I
they're
think
actually
about
called
it.
Pinkies.
What? God.
Of course they were.
The main
be.
Character is Doom Guy, okay?
Well, I thought that was the nickname of the wheelchair dude in the movie, was Pinky.
Oh, man, have you seen that movie with Carl Urban
movie.
And The Rock?
Yes, I have.
I've never seen that movie.
Thank you for reminding me about that, by which I mean, Kevin, screw you for reminding me about that.
But regardless of that, because you get a gauze cannon, right? Which is the closest thing to a sniper rifle you
I
get.
Really want that to be a medic rifle. You just shoot gauze at people.
No other kind of gauze.
Aw.
And it'll actually throw you backwards.
Wait, isn't that Gauss?
Yes, that's typically how you pronounce it.
Like, as in the guy's last name?
Johann Gauss?
Yeah.
You know what?
Actually, it's probably... Is it Johann?
You know all I gotta say to that, Tyler? I'm American, and I play Battletech. It's gauze.
Even in Battletech, it's pronounced Gauss.
Yeah,
you just pronounce it wrong.
It seems like Battletech would probably go with a European pronunciation for most of its weapons, given its influence due to European politics and noble
you
houses.
You are the first people I've ever heard refer to this as Gauss.
I'm
pretty sure I call it a Gauss rifle, and I play Battletech.
And Gaussian distribution, which
well,
is...
Well, man, I'm still calling it a gauze rifle, so...
That's fine, but that a gauze rifle is a rifle that shoots gauze at people.
No, it's not. You still got the super shotgun from Doom 2, so you got a double-barreled shotgun, but its usefulness is kind of sketchy because you get the triple-shot shotgun blast.
How is ammo in that game? I know you get it from melee killing things, but how prevalent is it? Do you ever feel pressed for ammo?
I wasn't feeling pressed for ammo, but I'm a good shot.
Did you mostly use the good guns?
I tended to switch between everything.
Okay, that's the experience I want.
You often will switch between guns because you might run out of ammo for a specific weapon and then just switch to another
one. I did
that
in the original Doom, too.
I never felt like I was pressed to the point where I was like, oh no, I'm almost completely and totally out of ammo.
It sounds like they pretty much hit the spot I want them to.
Yeah, I always had a gun that had ammo in it. But the chainsaw that Jeremy alluded to, actually, it's interesting because each enemy has a certain amount of gas that it takes to kill. And you can always tell how much gas you have because... It and the BFG are actually underneath your ammo bars. You can always see how much ammo you have. They're in,
because they're like the important hits. Weapons.
Well, yeah, clearly. So I've actually used the chainsaw on pretty much everything at least once. The Mancubus take 5, and I think the Barons of Hell take 6.
I'm sorry, a Mancubus? Kill.
Yes.
It's like an Incubus, but it's really insecure about itself.
They're big.
Aren't
and fat
incubi
guys.
Male? Isn't it?
Yeah, that's why it's really insecure about itself.
Yeah. It's a Mancubus.
Well, that's because the Mancubus is a big fat guy. If anybody actually goes and watches the thing that is on our site, it's the big fat guy that I chainsaw in the back at one point. And actually,
what a carrying soul.
I think I chainsaw 2 Mancubus in that, and that's it.
Mancubi.
I just hear him as Hedonism Bot, and I would love to see that voice dub.
Well, they don't talk to you very much. So... It's not a very long game, maybe 8 hours, but there's a lot of secrets and stuff that I didn't find because I wasn't really looking around for it.
Also, what I want in my Doom game, a bunch of secrets Zach didn't find.
I probably could if I actually went back and tried to find them. I just wasn't. The movement mechanics, really cool. You get a double jump, and if you get close to a ledge, your guy will actually grab onto it and pull himself up. So that's actually opens up a lot of options. And even though the, you know, in the areas have a lot of general clutter that you would see in a lot of modern first-person shooters that you don't see in the original Doom, they give you that so you can actually still traverse the terrain in the same fashion.
I think that's the effect Titanfall had on the genre, because even the Call of Duties are starting to give you that sort of stuff.
Maybe. I think a couple of other ones, like Brink and Mirror's Edge, did it first.
I feel like Mirror's Edge didn't have a whole lot of clutter. It was just, like, running around.
Well, the entire idea of it was, like, the first-person free-running game.
And then they rebooted it as the Hunger Games.
I don't know. I didn't play very much of Mirror's Edge. I just knew that about it. And then Titanfall obviously brought in a first-person shooter thing and was very free-run heavy. Like, you can't actually free-run. You can basically just pull yourself up on ledges and catch ledges. It still opened up the map quite a bit for what you can actually do.
Yeah, and Doom is big on mobility. When people compare Doom to modern shooters, it's always about sprinting 10 times your face speed and being able to dodge projectiles.
I don't know if there's a sprint button in it. I very seldom use the grenades that you get because I always forgot what button they were on. And I forgot they were there.
You're usually
control.
The guy that uses all of the grenades.
I know.
Tyler and I are usually the ones that are like, I finished the mission with all three Molotovs.
I needed to hoard these just in case.
Yeah, what if some sort of Korean boss monster bursts from the ground that can only be harmed by grenades?
I mean, he's made fun of us before, but we've had situations where he's like, crap, I'm out of grenades. Don't worry, we've got some.
Yeah, we play Payday and we end the mission and I feel like I've done something wrong if I leave the mission area with all three grenades. Where they're like, I didn't use any of mine. Okay, that's why the most important skill for me in that is the top level of ammo specialist, because it lets me recover my grenades.
Anything else you've played this week, grenade slut?
No, I am a grenade pimp, because I pimp them out to everybody who wants to get blown up.
You get a grenade, and you get a grenade, and you get a grenade!
Okay, Grenade Ellen, what else have you played?
I thought that was Oprah.
That was Oprah.
It is, but I like Ellen a lot more.
Okay.
I hate her show, but I like her as a person and want her to succeed.
Like I said, I played some League of Legends. I beat Pokemon X.
The X is for the treasure is here.
Yep.
Because and the why is for why the hell did I beat the first one?
I wanted to get prepared to play Sun and Moon, so...
Do you feel prepared?
Is your
I'm
body
pretty confident.
You feel like if Illidan shows up, you'll be like, I got this.
Yeah,
what Pokemon would Illidan use? Dowblade, obviously.
I did all the hardcore training in Doom for Pokemon Sun and Moon. I think I'm ready to go.
Oh, so Alex and I were talking about this the other night, and we're like, we feel like a lot of recent Pokemon are just stuff they found at Shigeru Miyamoto's garage. Why does he have a sword? I don't know, but there's a matching one over here.
I love the Honedge line so much. It's one of my favorite Pokemon.
Sword into two swords into sword and shield.
But I even really like that Japanese legend about if an inanimate object lasts 100 years, it comes to life.
Yeah, and there are
really
a lot
cool
of Pokemon
that
are that.
And its lore about possessing people who use it is really cool.
I also wanted to use that in the Pokemon RPG that we were running
Yes,
eventually.
I did too.
Because well, the fact that a Honedge can possess you if you try to pick it up.
Well,
no,
also
but
there's
you can just
an ability.
Wield it as a weapon.
We are spirit bonded.
Basically, I wanted to be riding a Dragonite while wielding at least a Honedge to go fight people. Like, I wanted to be riding a dragon, wielding a magic sword that was.
I wanted to give it to you so much.
Take me closer. I want to hit it with my sword.
That game's not very good.
It's just clunky.
But other than that, not really anything else. What have you been up to, Jeremy, since it hasn't been slaying the demons of hell?
No, it has been catching them all some more. I need exactly 300 Pokemon.
Which ones are you missing?
So you've got over half, then.
Yes. I had half last week.
Oh. List them all off so the list.
Ivysaur, Charmeleon, Wartortle,
I didn't think you'd
Rhydon, Seadra,
Muk,
Magmar,
Megaton.
I evolved into a Magmar.
But he
it
wants a living
now?
Dex.
Yeah, and Gen 4 got into
the Yeah, you can trade it with, like, the Incinerator
Gen 4 was
the,
let's put a whole bunch of Pokemon from Gen 1 evolutions.
Okay, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, they also got Electrowire?
Electrive, which is a lot cooler and good.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Actually, Magmortar's pretty good,
I
too.
Like Magmortar's design. He has cool arm cannons. I don't think he's very good.
He's a pretty good special cannon.
He has Flame Body, so he was nice for hatching all the eggs I needed to hatch.
That's way better than his original form, because that was the thing that always struck me about Magmar, was his butt head.
So you used him to hatch the Protean Greninja you got from me?
No, actually, I used my Talonflame for that. No, this was to hatch an Igglybuff and a Pichu and a Cleffa and a Bonsly and all the baby Pokemon I needed.
Oh.
And whatever the base form of Meryl is. I forget what
I had one of this.
Okay.
What's the baby version of Jinx?
Oh, Smoochum. I forgot Smoochum. About that.
I did need one of those.
Gross.
So I played the back
it's
half of Heart Gold. And everyone remembers the second half of Gold being great, or Silver, if you prefer, because Kanto is there. But yep. Man, is Kanto bare bones. You basically just walk to each gym leader, say, "Hi, bro, I beat the Elite Four." And they're like, "Okay, I surrender." Gary puts up a fight. I should say Blue, because I prefer Blue anyway. He will even change his Pokemon if it's at type disadvantage. And he was like 5 levels higher than my highest Pokemon. So he was tough, but...
That's actually kind
of
cool.
The idea that you can go experience one of the previous generation's, like, area, that's really what I like about that.
And
so much that you can beat all the Pokemon gyms and all that, but because you can go experience that area again.
Aren't the legendary birds also there?
They are in HeartGold. They're not in the original.
Okay.
I also really like all the subtle storytelling they do about what's happened in those 3 years. Like, the power plant works now, and Koga's daughter has supplanted him, and Blue is the gym leader of Viridian now. There's lots of cool stuff there. Some of it's more subtle than that. Cinnabar Island blowing up because they couldn't fit all the stuff in it on the cart. Although now Blaine and Blue in the remake aren't lonely gym leaders who hang out in their gyms alone anymore, which is kind of too bad.
Aw, yeah. What, they've actually got buddies now?
Yeah, one of which is like a Blue fangirl, and I kind of love that. But
that actually is kind of cool.
But HeartGold added you can get all of the gym leaders' phone numbers and challenge them to rematches in the Saffron Fighting Dojo. So I had to go get them all so they'd all be there for me to fight at once.
Boss Rush?
Yes, Blue's a pain in the ass to get his phone number. He won't give it to you. You have to get it from his sister.
Lame.
He's so tsundere about Pokemon battling you.
It's not like I wanted to battle you. What starter does he have canonically in that one? Or does he just
he doesn't have
three?
One.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they give him his 3 replacements. Rhydon, Pidgeot, and what is his last Pokemon in that? Oh, Machamp. His Alakazam is now a Machamp.
Huh.
And in his rematch, he replaces his Rhydon with a Tyranitar.
Yeah, I mean, that's the correct choice. Good job.
I do like Rhydon, though.
Although Rhyperior? I like Rhyperior.
Oh, yeah, Rhyperior.
I actually don't like Rhyperior. I like Rhydon a lot more.
Is that another Gen 4 addition?
Yes.
You mean the design of them? Or...
Yes, the design.
Yeah, no, I agree. But Rhyperior is, like, a legit defender. So.
Of all the, hey, let's add evolutions to this in Gen 4, Rhyperior is the more that gives the most really from me. Like, Porygon Z is great.
Yep, it got sleeker.
It's got a virus, and now it's crazy.
I definitely like Magnezone, how they didn't... I'm glad they didn't make it, like, 6 magnets stuck together.
9 magnets would be great, though.
Yeah, that would have been funny if it was 3 Magnemites stuck together.
Magnetons stuck together, you mean?
Yeah. Magnetons.
Because they're like, Magnemite, one Magnemite. Magneton is 3 Magnemites, and then there's just one really big Magnemite again.
Doug Nano. It's just a horde of Diglett.
I really want, like, the evolved form of Doug Trio to actually be, like, have you seen the picture where it's, like, Diglett underneath the ground? It's, like, a big buff guy. It's just a big buff guy with the Diglett head.
I know.
The evolved form of Dugtrio.
I know the Alolan form has great hair.
So that's all I've been playing. That and the assignment, which is Psychonauts, a much beloved cult game that Zach hated, and guys, so did I. I'm sorry, guys. Wanted to like it.
I'm not.
I just don't.
I'm not, and guys, I didn't.
Yeah, so you shouldn't be sorry. But
yeah, you guys don't have to like the things I like.
But you should.
Clearly, they
I
don't
have
like
better
what
taste.
I like because they have terrible taste.
I mean, I also liked this game.
I mean, I'm well-seasoned. What can I say? I taste great.
So Psychonauts is a Tim Schafer game from after his time with whatever company he made adventure games with, but before Double Fine, I believe. It was LucasArts. Why could I not remember that? Yeah, because he just had Grim Fandango on a computer that he stole from work, which is how they were able to remake it for the Steam one, because they'd thrown the source code out at LucasArts. And Tim Schafer's like, yeah, I just took a computer from work. I'm pretty sure the source code's on there. Yep, here it is.
Seriously?
Yes.
Wouldn't there be legal issues with that, though?
There could
probably
be, but it was just the sort of thing where he's like, we're going to throw that out, right? Can I just have it? And they're like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Well, I meant the source code thing because of
potentially,
copyright reasons.
Well, they were trying to remake the game, the people who owned the copyright. But they didn't have the source code.
That's probably
because it wasn't kept around. And Tim Schafer's like, yeah, I got it.
Okay, so that I was thinking that it was just him, like, with the computer he basically stole from work and didn't have any kind of copyright. But if the copyright guys were like, yeah, we're trying to make this.
And they just happen to have it laying around. So.
Yeah. Archiving video games is weird because most video game source code does not exist anymore. So yeah, this is very Tim Burton in tone.
Yep. If you've seen a Tim Burton movie, well, you know how this game's going to go.
So yeah, Psychonauts is a 3D platformer. You play a psychic kid who, like, gate crashes psychic boot camp It's like actually, a summer camp?
Yeah, it's a summer camp, but also the there's military. Actual military training going on.
They do a lot of world building in this game, but the world is not really clear to me at all, and that doesn't seem intentional.
I don't feel like they do a lot of world building. It's more like, there are secret agents who are psychic, and also they're here for some reason. Actually, why are the two actual agents at this camp at all?
Because they're training the kids?
That seems like, why would you put an active field agent at a summer camp to train kids?
Because you need somebody who has experience to train people, although you would usually go with somebody who wasn't an active field agent.
I mean, I would say the washed up guy, but the washed up guy has like dissociative personality disorder.
Yeah, so. I feel like there aren't that many psychonauts to begin with, which is why they're training this new batch, so they kind of need all hands on deck.
Okay, that's fair. I can get behind
it. This comic is Psychonauts Academy. We don't get to see just Psychonauts. And these are the popular ones that everyone wants to read about, which is why they're in both books. Basically, everyone is Wolverine. So you play as Raz, this guy who wants to be a Psychonaut, and...
who's also an escaped circus child.
So you guys who liked it, tell me what you like about the tone of this game. Because I'm not a Tim Burton guy, despite having seen quite a few Tim Burton movies. Batman Returns is my least favorite Batman movie. Yes, counting the Adam West one. Yes, counting those super racist serials from the 40s.
I actually seriously debated picking up the Adam West Batman for Jeremy when I was at Best Buy.
It would have been a good choice. I'm just
going to
tell you.
I was going to say, I don't own it anymore. My copy was destroyed, so...
I forget, is Batman Returns the one with the bat nipples? Or is
no,
that...
that's the one where Danny DeVito is the penguin.
Oh, yeah.
It does have the cool part at the end where he puts jetpacks on penguins and uses them as missiles. Somehow, that's still not a good movie. It's also got friggin', what's his name?
Is that the one that has Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No, it's not.
No,
that's the one with the guy. Yeah, it's with Christopher Walken, and then he's got a...
Bruce Wayne.
His character has a son, and the actor is just doing a Christopher Walken impression the entire time, which is amazing. And it has Christopher Walken go up to Batman and go, "Bruce Wayne, why are you dressed as Batman?" And it's still a terrible movie. I don't know how it happens. I don't know how it works. It's bad.
Again,
it takes place at Christmas. It should be great.
It's not as bad as the bat nipples.
Yeah, it's worse. The bat nipples at least like have Arnold Schwarzenegger being like, "I will tell you puns to entertain you. Ice to meet you. What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age." Ice party. It at least has that and Uma Thurman doing something.
I guess.
She wants to dance like Uma Thurman.
I at least laugh when I'm watching. That has the Bat credit card, which is ridiculous and funny. It has Batman and Robin getting in on a bidding war on Poison Ivy.
Oh yeah, I had forgotten that part.
Anyway, Psychonauts. I like this game because it's got like some weird things. Like, it's just a mildly diseased reality, and
yeah,
I like those.
It's very odd. All the kids have these very weird personalities, but I found that endearing.
Yeah, everyone's mildly deranged. I mean, it feels like a Tim Burton film, and
yeah.
I like Tim Burton, so...
Yeah, I think my honest advice, I'm skipping to final thoughts, we will talk more about this game. Watch the opening cutscene on YouTube if you like it by this game.
Yeah,
it lasts
like,
too freaking long.
Yeah, the guy's speech is a little... Oleander's speech is a bit long, but like that scene where love interest girl's knees are shaking at the end, I'm like, man, that is such... Like, it's terrible, but it's also great. Especially since she continues to be, like, a dick to you for, like, most of the rest of the game.
Well, my favorite thing is that since you're psychic, you can hear her thoughts, so Raz doesn't know that she likes him at first, but then he keeps hearing her thinking at him like, "Man, I wish he wasn't so cute. Wait, are you in my head? God damn it."
And this game has a charm, definitely, but I don't know that it's worth the actual game you play. Because like Zach was saying, the opening cutscene is too long, it's unskippable, and I don't know what it accomplishes, other than like showing you what the deal is, but it doesn't really tell you much about Raz as a character. It doesn't really tell you about the world, and like doesn't get me excited to do something. To pull out a random example, the opening scene of Arkham Asylum with Batman driving the Joker to Arkham Asylum. I mean, that's kind of cheating. It's a licensed property. That's something that's happened in 1,000 times in different forms of media. So it's a setup you already know. But like, that's a real good opening to a game.
It wanted, at the end of the starting cutscene, I wanted to put my foot through Raz's face.
Yeah, he's kind of an entitled jerk.
And if I'm going to be stuck with this character, I don't want to hate my avatar.
It's actually weird because he's both simultaneously like way too brash and also not enough of a dick to be that brash.
Yeah,
see, he doesn't get to Deadpool,
compare it to the main character of Saints Row.
I have never.
He doesn't have a character, really. I mean, I guess early ones he does.
The first one he doesn't. Saints Row 3 and 4, they really give that character a character. But I mean, like, the opening thing of that, you're robbing a bank dressed as yourself.
That's awesome. You're actually in a costume disguised as yourself.
You're disguised as the Third Street Saints.
See, I just, like, that's kind of distracting. My point about this opening scene is it's long, it's unskippable, and it doesn't really get you excited to play. At least it doesn't for me. It doesn't really establish the world, I don't think. The word Psychonaut gets thrown out, but it almost feels like he might be making this up.
It didn't establish stakes for me. Usually if I get a long cutscene for it, I want to know what the stakes are. What am I doing here?
You should become a Psychonaut, or else.
Well, I guess the stakes are Raz has run away from home, so he really wants them to accept him.
Yeah, but we don't see what's wrong with his home, right?
No, well, not until later, but yeah. I thought he mentions that he had run away from...
Yeah, he does. He says it. Like, I know that, but, like, I don't care because why did you run away from home? For all I know, your parents are super nice and you're just rebelling and I don't care. Or, you know, maybe they're crazy meat carnies. I don't know. So the gameplay of Psychonauts is it's a 3D platformer from 2005 and...
Yep. Oof.
I've talked before about how I think Banjo-Kazooie is the peak of 3D platformers. And after this, they sort of evolve into a different sort of thing that's just kind of 2D platformers in 3D. But I really feel like this game is missing what's good about both kinds of 3D platformers.
There's a little bit of exploration on the over. Actually, even in the not overworld, there's like finding hidden stuff.
What is that?
Finding hidden stuff?
No, what's good about 3D platformers?
Yeah, exploration, finding hidden things.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
You complained about Banjo-Kazooie being a scavenger hunt. But, yeah. Like, that's what it is. That's what I would say is good about them.
Yeah, I like scavenger hunts.
Scavenger hunting, which you don't like, but that's what the good ones are. This one doesn't really have that.
Oh, so
except for the literal scavenger hunt.
So it's a piece of a better game. Got it.
And this game has collectibles like Banjo-Kazooie did, but it kind of goes to the Tui route where it has a ton of them. And there are, like, too many for me to keep track of personally. Like, hey, you need to collect these cards and also these arrowheads. And also these figments, and also these things. And also, once you get these things, you have to go to the store and for a nominal fee, purchase this thing, which will turn it into a different thing, which will then give you a thing.
Yeah, the buying the bits to turn it into, like...
That got a little tedious, but a lot of the times I would find myself, like, I just go back and have, like, 4 or 5 to buy and turn in.
Yeah, but, like, they could have just skipped the whole buying the Psychor, especially since there are only 10.
Yeah, it seemed really silly.
Like, it was a huge imposition early on, and then it immediately becomes, like, pointless.
Well, once the journal actually tells you to buy the dowsing rod, I felt like I spent, like, 15 minutes with the dowsing rod and then never had any money problems whatsoever.
Yep.
For, like, the rest of the game. So it was literally...
Also, there are cobwebs.
Oh, yeah, also cobwebs, which you turn into cards. So...
Those are actually important, because later on there will be cobwebs blocking where you need to go, so you need to have the cobweb duster in order to clear them.
Yeah, but, like... Why not just make it pyrokinesis or, like, some gating power?
Yeah.
My point is it's too much. Like, it's too much for me to keep in my head, and I love Banjo-Tooie. That's got too much going on, I think, as well, but I know what everything is. Everything sort of relates. This seems like they just wanted collectibles, because they're like, that's what 3D games have, right?
Yeah, and, like, you level up as a Psychonaut cadet, and, like, that doesn't really have a lot of weight after a while.
I also...
Once you get to, like, level 70, like...
You get upgrades... to some of your powers, so like your invisibility lasts twice as long, your TK can throw twice as far, eventually you get unlimited ammo for your shot.
Yeah, but it, like, I don't know, leveling up seems cheap after a while, like it, I don't know, it doesn't feel valuable.
It didn't feel valuable to me at first either, because you need to get 10 levels to get anything, and it's not like leveling up takes a long chore, but I really feel like that first level up should give you something. We talked about Paper Mario recently, and Zach didn't like how little it gave you, but it still gave you the flashing lights and a choice. Pokemon early levels don't give you much, but you do get to see the plus to all these stats.
One of the first couple levels, you almost always get a couple new moves with Pokemon.
Yeah, Psychonauts gives you nothing for your first 9 level ups, which doesn't really make me want to seek them out.
I didn't really treat those as the levels. I treated those more as experience, like I needed 10 experience to get a level. That so basically divide my level by 10, and that was my actual level.
That makes sense, but then I think it takes too long to get you that first level. Yeah, I really think they should have given you something at level 1 and then said every 10 levels you get something new.
Yeah, I think that would have been much better progression, or at least like been more of a hook.
I think one of the reasons this game didn't do well at first is it's really bad at hooking the player in. This opening scene is too long. The tutorial level is not super exciting. It has some cool ideas, but it's not super exciting.
So it's crap. Maybe the reason this game had me is because I spent like an hour just like exploring and talking to students before going to and doing the basic braining.
Same here.
And I think that's what's good about the game is it's sort of adventure game like packed with content. This game is polished very, very well. But what's underneath is not very good. It's not like a polished turd. It's like a turd dipped in gold. And hey, there's some cool, valuable gold on the inside. But if you try to drill into it, you are in for a bad day.
It's like if you're trying to run, say, Fire Emblem with all the additional stuff added onto it. But the only thing interesting about it is the characters. The combat's great in Fire Emblem. In this one, it's just kind of the rest of the game other than apparently the characters, which I didn't give two shits about. Or boring.
Well, again, that's a stylistic choice. Yeah. So if you like the style, you'll probably enjoy playing through the game because I didn't really have that much trouble with the gameplay.
Yeah, my problem was it was just kind of eh. It was uninspiring gameplay. I was mostly making faces at you talking, Zach, is because I lost track of your analogy at some point in there, and I wasn't sure if you're comparing Fire Emblem to, like, a hypothetical Fire Emblem, or, like...
No.
With, like, all the characters removed or something. I was confused.
They made that game. It's called Radiant Dawn.
Good one! Before we get too far away, I want to say, can you honestly say this game wouldn't be better as a Telltale-style game that was just about exploring the characters and conversations, in a weird summer camp?
That was what drove me on through the game was I had to beat this level to then do more character interactions.
I mean, I also like the I have a new power, I wonder if I can go like the Metroidvania backtracking to get the stuff I saw earlier, but like it's not as good as a Metroidvania for that.
All right, do you guys want to talk about any of the particular powers? Because I really didn't enjoy the basic gameplays. You've got a jump and a double jump, and then you've got a basic attack, very similar to Mario 64, but Mario 64 at least gave you token enemies to punch. This game, I literally never encountered an enemy, and I didn't play very far into it. But, like, the punch didn't seem very interesting.
No enemies on that first level.
Yeah, there aren't. Well,
It depends on if you count the bully, who's more of an obstacle that your verb to get through is punch. But he can't attack.
There's
you.
Also that, like, cannon. You have to hit the cannon in basic braining.
Well, there's also the mini game to punch the targets.
Oh, yeah.
Those aren't enemies, though. That's not interesting.
Well, again, there are enemies on the overworld. They're actually pretty funny. They're psychic bears.
And psychic cougars.
Yes. Those show up at night. But what's really funny is one of the characters is a Russian kid, and he'll ask you, like, have you seen a bear? And he's all interested in...
He's super obsessed with it. He, like, tortures a kid.
Yeah,
over
I saw that
bear.
Character.
Well, he's like, I'm from Russia, and Russia, we wrestle bears. And so I thought it was really funny seeing that kid and being like, have you seen a bear? And then later on, I actually see a bear.
Although he's looking for like a hairless bear or something.
He was looking for a weird hairless bear.
You might say it's barely hair. I like the flavor of the game. It could be better, definitely.
Yeah.
I guess.
The levitation power was interesting because instead of just like giving you flight or something like that, they give you a bouncy ball that you get to roll around on. So it's interesting in the fact that it increases your land speed, but it's kind of hard to control. It also doubles your jump height, and then you can use it to float by hanging from it with a balloon.
There seem to be, like, platforming segments later on in the game that forget that you already have levitation.
No, that's totally how I felt. There was a lot of times where it was like, you know, oh, you're supposed to jump over here, or I can levitate and jump over here and just skip, like, half of this.
I mean, easily the best power is clairvoyance, simply because it's like, if you like the quirkiness of this game, guess what? You get an extra power for, like... another 50% quirk.
Yeah, you get to see into people's minds and see what they see. So you see their mental image of you rather than just you. And they're usually like cardboard cutouts almost of you, but they're really funny. Like you can even do it on bosses to see what the boss sees.
And that's what I'm talking about when I say polished. That's all really interesting. It's just really too bad to me that it's wrapped around this really mediocre 3D platformer.
That's an interesting idea, but it doesn't make gameplay interesting.
I feel like this game actually hits a very similar spot as Secret of Monkey Island. I really like the jokes. I like the setting, but the gameplay is really bogging it down.
And it seems like this would be better as any form of adventure game. It seems like if you were finding weird psychic solutions to things instead of jumping on tight ropes and swinging from things, it would be a much better game.
It is attached to the fact that he's a circus runaway, but I mean, that's told to you. I don't know that he's actually that. He could just be making shit up.
Some of the later levels, it's less about platforming and more about puzzle solving.
Yeah, like the Milkman conspiracy is great. Actually, pretty much everything once you get into the insane asylum is great. But that
how long
earlier,
does that take, though?
Way too long.
Yeah, super long.
Like 8-9 hours, I think, is when
you
I
got
finally
10 minutes. Grab me before then, or piss off.
Now, and I actually agree with that. Like, if you don't have a decent hook in the first 10 minutes, like,
hey, let's see our conversation about Ruby earlier.
Exactly. The fight scene that opens Ruby is enough of a hook for me, apparently. But...
that got me. It didn't keep me there.
But like, they at least grabbed your attention.
And this game. Man, even I thought the opening cutscene was too long, and I actually like this game, so...
Alright, we wouldn't be complete if we didn't talk about the meat circus, which is up there with the most frustrating levels in video gaming. So, Kevin, you want to talk about the meat circus?
Yeah, so the meat circus is the final level of the game, where you're entering a weird amalgamation of your own mind and someone else's mind. One of the things that really pissed me off about it was there's that annoying circus music playing the entire time that you're trying to do precision platforming. As well as
the mute button exists, so it does suck. But
it does, but it's still part of the level design, and sometimes you do need sound cues for certain things, so you don't want to just mute everything.
I'm with him. You shouldn't have that kind of ridiculously irritating sound cue playing over and over.
Well,
at least have an option to turn off the music itself.
I mean, you do.
You might have been able to do that.
It also can work if it's like the music is antagonistic, right?
Yeah,
if you can
exactly.
have like a Deadpool moment where you get to the music box and you get to destroy it, and be cathartic, I think that works, but I'm guessing that doesn't happen.
No.
It seems more along the lines of the developers didn't realize how freaking annoying their music was.
And that actually happens with circus settings a lot, actually.
It probably wouldn't have been too bad if this had been one of the earlier levels where the difficulty didn't just spike for absolute... like, I know it's the last level, but this was ridiculous in the amount of difficulty that it changed. So not only do you have this annoying carnival music playing... you're trying to protect this little kid who's being attacked by mutant bunnies.
Escort quest.
Yep, it's an escort quest, but it's a platformer, so what you do is you have to... the little kid is trying to catch his bunny while other mutant bunnies are attacking him. So you have to go telekinesis the bunny so that he can run over and catch it, and he's extremely slow. When he does, he flies up to another section of the level and then starts getting attacked by mutant bunnies because he let go of his bunny for some stupid reason. So while he's sitting there getting attacked, going, ow, my head, stop it, ow, just over and over.
With the circus music.
With the circus music.
Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, that brings up, like, this game's bosses. There's a puzzle to figure out, and once you figure out the puzzle, that's neat, but then you have to do it, like, seven, like, all the boss fights last too long. And it's not that they're hard, necessarily, it's that they become tedious once you figure out the trick.
They last longer than they're interesting.
Exactly. Yes. I was just thinking the, like, critic fight, where he's, like, in the critic-mobile. Like, you figure out the trick to that almost immediately, and...
at least that, you only have to do it twice more, so that wasn't horrible.
But it becomes super tedious after that, because you're like, man, I already know this, now I have to fly up there again, and
yeah,
shots again.
Although, it was the fact that flying up there takes like a minute or something stupid like that, and you can't just fly up there, you have to be dodging his pens or whatever the hell he's shooting at you.
He's also, like, he's shooting ink at you, and he's literally firing derogatory words, like the ink explodes. Like, it's a cool idea, but man, the fight lasts way too long.
So is that a good final thought for this game? It's a cool idea, but...
man, is it way too long?
It's not even that it's too long for me. It's that it didn't grab my attention.
If it was made now, it'd probably be one of them Telltale games that people seem to like.
Yeah, and I think it could have life as that sort of game.
Well, speaking of that, there actually is a Psychonauts 2 that has been kickstarted that they're working on.
Yeah, this game got popular like around 2011.
But like, I hope they realize what made it popular and that it wasn't the 3D platforming.
I think that is what they've realized, is that it's the characters and the story, which is stuff that I really loved.
Or even the set pieces, like the thing where you're a giant Godzilla monster attacking Lunfish Tokyo.
That was a fantastic level.
Or Waterloo Ooh, where a guy who has a hereditary memory of Napoleon Bonaparte is playing a board game against Napoleon and you have to help him. That's funny. It's cool. It's an interesting idea, but
I actually like settings that are slightly off like that. Like with PsyOps, it's a very similar idea, just better executed gameplay.
Like,
despite being the game designed to demonstrate the Havoc engine.
Like, and I feel like even you would have liked this game if you could stand the horrible, like, It's not even horrible. It's just super medium. Like, I all feel the like interesting it... stuff comes 8 hours
I've
in.
I've played better tutorial levels. This one was god-awful.
It was.
So I, like I said, you got 10 minutes. I gave it a half an hour, and, like, most of it was, like, after into that tutorial level, and I'm like, look at my watch that I'm not actually wearing because I don't wear a watch. But I look down at the timer and go, oh my god, I've already been playing this game for a half an hour.
And that should have been long enough to make you interested in the game, and really...
It wasn't. And like Tyler said, at the end of the game, when you get to the Usain Asylum, those are some of the best levels. Although I didn't really like the actors or the actresses level, because you had to keep changing...
It got tedious.
It got super tedious. You had to keep changing set pieces in order to progress, and it just...
It feels like this game really needed Shigeru Miyamoto to slap people and say, make it interesting, and cut this out, it's no longer fun. Or, like, that sort of a muse, instead of a Tim Schafer.
Yeah. But, again, I did like a lot of the level design. Like, even the... So you're in an actress's head, and you're on a stage performing plays. The painter's head was really cool. So you're fighting a bull, but it's this kind of, like, cool black velvet...
It's very stylized. It's like an artist's interpretation of a bull in his own head.
Well, yeah. And
it's actually,
like,
literally that.
See, like, anytime someone describes Psychonauts to me, it sounds great. But playing it, I just... my eyes droop over. This comes from the era where I kind of quit playing video games, and I think it was the games, not me.
I mean, that could totally it. I guess I just kind of... I can zen out and just kind of get through the platforming without really having to think about it too much, and then come back when it's like, all right, now we're in a cutscene. We're talking to Tara Strong, like, is in this game.
Where does it get your attention, though? Because, like, it starts with a cutscene, so it should start getting interesting, right? Like...
All right, unfortunately, that is where the episode has to end, because that is where we lost the recording. You can probably guess about what our final thoughts were. Zach and I did not care for the game so much. Tyler and Kevin kind of liked it a bit more. They might talk about it on later episodes. We'll see. As for ranking, Psychonauts ended up at number 107, above 1080 Snowboarding and below Donkey Kong. Unfortunately, we've lost the discussion about why it ended up there, even though we had it twice, and I don't think we're going to have that a third time. We'll see, maybe, if there are enough requests for it by email. Speaking of email, we are still having our contest for that sweet Volcanion code for Pokemon X, Y, Omega Ruby, or Alpha Sapphire. All you have to do is email us at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com with your suggestion for which starter I should pick when I play Pokemon Platinum, as well as a cool nickname for it. Next week, we are playing Echo the Dolphin. Kevin will be joining us again, and happy Thanksgiving to those of you who celebrate it. This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2016. All the video games and other media mentioned within are copyright their respective owners. Past episodes and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us by email at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. We're also on iTunes and would really appreciate it if you left us a 5-star review. Podcast over. You have to go to the start screen and load your last save.
Mood.